Hey there, Frederick. What you doing? Oh, hello, brother of mine. Why, I'm just studying for a math test tomorrow. That's pretty neat, Frederick. Braxton, brother, shouldn't you also be studying for the test? Well, you see, Frederick, due to my high levels of apathy and the stress of knowing that I'll never be good at math, I've decided to completely give up on even trying to do good on the test.
So, what are you going to do instead?
Oh, I'm just going to go watch some YouTube videos.
School sucks! Especially math! Ugh!
When will I ever use geometry / trigonometry / calculus in the real world?
I think you're only saying that because you're bad at geometry / trigonometry / calculus.
Why is everyone so quick to hate on math? Math is easy. How many essays did you have to write for math class?
Oh, that's right. E to the I pi plus 1. Which is 0.
One thing I would change about math class is I think it's dumb that you have to show your work.
Ugh!
Do you know how much harder it is to cheat when you have to show your work?
Dear math, solve your own problems, tweeted MatPat.
I hate Matt, replied Protato Gamer. Hey, that's not very nice of you, Prote. All he did was tweet about math.
Maybe what you really hate is spelling. Or maybe you really do hate MatPat.
Well, two can play at this game. When will I ever need to know about the themes and symbolisms in To Kill a Mockingbird when I go into the real world?
That's right, never!
You don't need to know anything to be in the real world.
Okay, I think we can all agree that a lot of what school teaches you isn't that important.
And there's definitely more important things schools could be teaching you, like taxes or how to pick a good president. But I'm not the one who makes the curriculum, so why am I even talking about it?
Regardless of how broken your education system is, you should always stay in school, kids. Right, Dave?
I was a good student in school, not counting college. And look how I turned out. I'm not using everything I learned in school almost every day. Sure, you'll probably never need to know that much about Shakespeare's plays. But hey, now you know how to read old-timey complicated books. And no, you'll probably never have to find the area under a curve ever. But now you can say that you can. And isn't that what life's all about?
So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my school stories.
What do you mean Jaden already made a video on school stories? Did she call them school stories? I already stole from her like 2 videos ago. Okay, just, I'll think of something.
So enough with this introduction. I'm going to be telling you all some of my academy anecdotes.
So you know how guys can pee standing up? It's amazing. Ladies, if you've never peed standing up, then you're missing out. But there are some rules that apply with having the superpower. Like, don't go to a urinal right next to another guy unless it's absolutely necessary. Or, if the urinals don't have a divider, then everyone can all agree to keep your eyes and mind straight. These rules have been taught to us at a very young age. By the time we were in elementary school, we were all pros at peeing. Except for some of us when we were asleep. But that's not important. So at this point in life, we all should have known what we were doing. But there is this one kid who I guess no one ever taught him how to pee correctly. This kid, I'm not going to say his race because it doesn't matter, but when he went to the bathroom, he would pull his pants and underwear all the way down to the ground. Some of the ladies watching this might be thinking, wait, is that not how guys pee? Ladies, you'll just have to trust me on this, but that is the most wrong way a person can pee. The first time I saw the kid doing this was when I was in the urinal right next to him.
Pee faster!
As us two bros were peeing, a third bro walked into the bathroom, saw this kid's bottom, and just went, ooh, and walked out of the bathroom. I wish I could have done the same. How do you tell someone, hey man, when you pee like that, everyone can see your butt. So just, here, let me show you how to do it. I don't know what happened to that kid, but I think he would agree with me that math is easy. He was Asian. When I was little, I had a very weird sense of humor. So in the 5th grade, there was this girl I'd known for a long time. We weren't strangers or anything. And one day I said to her, you have 2 big blue zits right there. And I pointed at her eyes. I was talking about her eyes. I called her eyes zits. Get it?
She, immediately slapped me. Probably because the joke was so awful.
And that was the first time I ever got slapped by someone who wasn't a family member. And yes, it was Priscilla, the girl I sat next to in the cardboard boat video.
She claims that the slap was an accident and that she was just trying to fake slap me to scare me. But I think she was really just self-conscious about her eyesits. One time, my 6th grade teacher, who was the same height as all of us, threw a stapler across the room because we wouldn't stop talking.
Here's an anecdote about the first time I got detention. And it isn't that exciting. I was in the 7th grade and our class was at a computer lab. And the kid sitting next to me, his race doesn't matter, so I'm not going to say it.
Asian, kept changing the computer wallpapers to cats, and he kept showing me. To be fair, I thought what he was doing was hilarious. Then I asked him, can you change the background to Chuck Norris?
That just goes to show you how long ago this story took place.
He showed me what he did, I laughed, but then the teacher said, who's changing the wallpapers? She was able to see everyone's screens from her computer, and the kid said, me and James were.
Dude, don't bring me into this! You were the one changing the wallpapers! I mean, I was involved a little, but don't drag me down with you!
We ended up getting detention, except my school didn't call it detention, they called it CARE, which I'm sure was an acronym for something. If it wasn't an acronym, that would have been a weird thing to call detention. Let's just say it stood for... kids are really extra. The whole time I was in CARE, I kept thinking in my head, don't cry, don't cry, don't cry! If they see you cry, you might as well move to China!
And that was the only time I got detention. Except it wasn't called detention. So I still have a clean record.
Alright, here's the last anecdote. This one happened when I was in the 11th grade. I was in an AP US history class, and I had it for a 0 hour. So that meant I was at the class before school even started, and I was way too tired to learn about presidents. I was sitting in class when all of a sudden I sneezed very loudly. And it was an above average sneeze. Like one of those sneezes where you had to lean into it. And after I sneezed, this kid near me said, hey yo, Mr. Teacher, can we get some tissues? This boy's got a bloody nose. And I thought, oh shoot, I do? Well, that sneeze was pretty violent, and I did pick my nose a few minutes ago. And then the teacher looked right at me and said, oh yeah, you can just go to the bathroom. So I got up, and as I was walking to the door, I felt my face and realized, wait a minute, I don't have a bloody nose. I turned around, and there was a kid who actually did have a bloody nose walking towards me. I'm not going to say the race of the kid because it doesn't matter. Canadian, but I was in a pretty awkward situation. So I punched myself until I actually did get a bloody nose. Nah, I'm just kidding. What I really did was I said out loud, I have to go to the bathroom too. And then I left. I didn't really have to go to the bathroom. I didn't want to see another exposed butt anyway, so I just waited outside awkwardly for a long time. I got an A in that class, by the way, if you were wondering. I still don't use anything I learned in that class.
Jeff, you have the board.
I'll take random James trivia for 400, Alex.
This was James's first career choice before his YouTube channel kicked off.
Oh, I know this one. What is a male prostitute?
Okay, that bit's done now. Male prostitute was never a career goal.
Well, I mean, it's not completely off the table. You never know how YouTube will turn out.
If you didn't know this odd ones out trivia, I wanted to be a math teacher when I grew up. My dream job was actually a cartoonist. But since me and my parents didn't think I'd be able to make any money drawing pictures, I chose a math teacher as my, I'll settle for this job. I mean, I like math, so I wouldn't have hated being a math teacher. And I'm also probably good at teaching children. I haven't checked though, but how hard can it be?
Listen, kids, I have 2.7 million subs on YouTube, so if you want a shout-out, you'll have to do the homework.
And I thought that a teaching job would give me enough free time to doodle cartoons, so being a math teacher would have been perfect. But oh boy, that did not turn out how I expected. If for some reason my channel died and I stopped making YouTube videos, I would probably go back to school and finish my math education major. And then I'd be teaching a class, and then one of my students would find out that I used to do YouTube, and then they'd say, Mr. James, are you the odd ones out?
The odd ones out? I haven't heard that name in years.
You shouldn't smoke in front of children, Mr. James.
I just want to point this out. In my peeing video, I drew my first grade teacher like this, and in my Harry the Moth video, I drew my kindergarten teacher like this.
Do you have an explanation on why they're drawn so similar?
Yeah, I was lazy.
Teachers play such an important role for children, and if I'm being honest, I don't think they get paid enough to take their job seriously. A good teacher can make you excited to learn the material and actually teach you, while a bad teacher can not only waste your time and not teach you anything, but also crush your dreams. I took choir in 9th grade. Everyone had to take it, okay? It was a prep school. I'm not weird. And one time while we were singing a song, the teacher said, stop! Who's flat? Then she pointed at a boy and told him, you, sing. And he sang for a bit. Then she pointed at another boy, you, sing. Then she went through a couple more, and then she pointed to me and said, you, sing. And I sung.
Stop! James, during the next song, don't sing.
Either she had really good hearing, or I was just that terrible at singing. Now, I really hated choir, so if given the choice to sing or not sing, I would choose not every time. But what if I actually wanted to be a singer, and when I sang just then, I was trying my hardest? That would have been soul-crushing! I would have given up on music right then and there. Thankfully, my art teacher was a lot more laid back. She definitely had favorite students, and I wasn't one of them, but she never told anyone not to draw. One time I showed my art teacher my newest comic, which at the time was this one,
And without telling her that I was the one who made it, I asked, "What do you think of this art style?" And she said, "Oh, I hate it, but it's fine if you like it. In my classroom, we try to go for realism, but people with that art style can still have successful careers."
She said she hated it.
Teachers just need to be more supportive with students and teach them in creative ways. That's why I think so many people hate math. You just haven't had a teacher that made you want to learn.
You'd pay attention and study for the tests if I was your math teacher, wouldn't you?
Don't get me wrong, teaching isn't an easy job. And even the best teacher can't make everyone in their class excited to learn. I mean, I probably could, but there's definitely a difference between a good and bad teacher. I had this French teacher in 9th grade, and she made me really hate French, and by association, the entire country of France. She spoke English on the first day of class, and then only spoke French for the rest of the year. We were in French 1, by the way. I didn't understand anything that was going on. I would just tune her out. I'd be doodling on a piece of paper, and then people would get out their textbooks and start flipping through it, and then I'd think, oh, we're doing this now? I didn't learn anything in that class. Honestly, I barely know any French. This is all the French words that I know. I can count to 10. Ou, du, trois, carte, cinq, six, sept, huit, neuf. Okay, I can only count to 9. And I know that Eiffel Tower is Tour Eiffel, quack is coin, and door is portal. My twin sister, who was in the same class and had the same living conditions as me, turned out a lot different. She learned a lot of French and continued to take classes after 9th grade. So maybe this whole knowledge thing has a lot to do with the student and not the teacher. Nah, it's the teacher's fault. Did anyone else, when you were little, think that your teacher lived at the school? Because I remember one time my kindergarten teacher came to school in her pajamas and told us that she lived at the school. And that made perfect sense. Yeah, this is your home. This is the only place they ever see you. Therefore, you live here.
Man, I wish I could work in my pajamas.
When I went to community college, I had a math teacher who was this old grandpa, and on the first day, he told us that he never missed a class in 20 years. But then, the very next day, he didn't show up. Now, in college, teachers not showing up to class is pretty normal. Or at least it was in the colleges I went to. It happened more times than it did in high school, that's for sure. That's something to look forward to, seniors. Every time it does happen, there's always that one kid who will say, "You know, there's a rule that if the teacher doesn't show up within the first 15 minutes of class, then you can leave." I don't know if that rule is true, but I'm not going to look it up. Because I like that rule, and I want it to be true. And I don't even go to college anymore, so why does it matter? So teachers not showing up, that's not too abnormal, but since this old guy told us he never missed a day of class in 20 years, we thought he died. But nope, he just missed a day. He showed up the third day. I don't know what his excuse was, because after I saw him, I thought, oh good, he's alive. And then I stopped paying attention, because community college sucks. I'd say that my favorite teacher would be my 11th grade AP US History teacher. I liked him because it was obvious that he liked the material, and he would teach us in a way that was fun and interesting. He was also a more laid-back and generally a funny person. He's the teacher that I want to be. He gave me a compliment once that has always stuck with me. He was telling the class about the AP test, which is the super important open-ended essay test that we took at the end of the year, and if we did well on it, the grade would count for college credit. So like a week before the test, our teacher was preparing us, and he said, "Guys, don't try and be funny on the AP test. The graders don't have a sense of humor. Except James. James can be funny on the test." Aw, that compliment made me so happy and confident. I don't know how serious my teacher was when he said that, and he probably doesn't even remember saying it, but I really appreciated it. I ended up getting a 3 on the test, which is only partial credit in select colleges, so maybe I'm not funny. That was 11th grade. In 12th, I took all AP classes, but I didn't take any of the AP tests. I was too apathetic. But I turned out fine. Actually, no. My favorite teacher is my 9th grade English teacher, who emailed me and said he watches my videos. Hi, Mr. Batman. Sorry I plagiarized the Berlin Wall essay. I really wanted to talk about my 9th grade poetry teacher. Yes, I took choir, French, and poetry all in 9th grade. It was a preparatory school. That teacher was definitely something, but this video is getting too long, so I'll have to make a part 2. I'll take school facts for 800, Alex. This is the most useless class that a person could take in school. Oh man. What is poetry? I'm sorry, Jeff, but the correct answer is all of them. They're all useless. In my first video, I didn't have enough time to say this, but I hate it when people are cool with their teachers. I understand that some teachers are more laid back than others, and sometimes they'll ask a class, "So, how was everyone's weekend?" Then if you want to talk about something or have important news, then you can share it. My dog died! Haha, yeah, they do that. But there's a line and you shouldn't cross it. Don't talk to your teacher just to talk to them during class. I don't know how much of a problem this is in other places of the world, but sometimes there would be kids in my class that would say, "Hey, Susan. How was your daughter's dance recital? Did you remember all of her moves? I saw the video you posted on Facebook. It looked like she was having a fun time.
Stop it! Stop it! Stop it!
Maybe I wouldn't have been a good teacher.
Before I tell you about my poetry teacher, I need to tell you about the preparatory school I went to so you can better understand where I'm coming from. So I went to a preparatory school in 9th grade, and first off, what is a preparatory school? Google says it's a private school that prepares students for college. Now, hearing that definition, you might think, wait, don't all schools prepare students for college? Isn't that a school's job? And you might think that a preparatory school is more fancy and made out of marble and all the kids come from rich families. No. What it means is that the schools get little government funding and parents have to pay for desks and the teacher's salary. I know different private schools will vary depending on how rich the parents are. I'm sure that school made out of marble exists somewhere, but the preparatory school I went to was relatively worse than a normal public school. The school I went to didn't even have desks. They had fold-up tables and the chairs were fold-up too. How did they-
Oh. Well, now I know where all the budget went.
The main difference between a public school and a prep school is that a prep school is smaller and there's a uniform and there's lockers. So, why did my twin sister and I attend a preparatory school?
Because twins have superpowers and we need to go to a special school to enhance our abilities.
Nah, I'm just kidding. I'm kidding. That'd be cool though. We went because when we were starting our freshman year, our older brother was a senior and he was already attending this preparatory school, and my mom didn't want to have to drive to two high schools to pick us up. We already had a carpool in place. You can't just mess with the carpool. And me and my sister didn't know what to expect from a public high school. We've never been. We thought we'd get bullied or something. Boy, I feel like picking on someone today. Yeah, sure, we can go to a prep school. I mean, what's the worst that can happen? Well, the carpool we had made it so we would arrive at the school super early before everyone else, and we'd be picked up from the school super late. And also, because it was a prep school, they gave out a stupid amount of homework. I remember breaking up the homework into pieces, like, okay, I can do the geometry while I'm waiting for school to start, the biology homework I can do during geometry class, and I have choir after lunch so I can just do this during lunch. Ah, look at me being responsible. I have a little sister who just finished her freshman year in a public high school, and she thinks it was so hard. Oh, you thought your 9th grade was hard? Try doing twice the amount of homework and wear the same pants every day. So now the only question remaining is, why did my older brother go to a prep school in the first place?
Bro, why did you go to a prep school in the first place?
IDK, just decided to. Just felt like I should. My mom reads my scripts, and she told me that he went to a prep school because one of his friends said that there were cute girls at the school, so he decided to stay there for 4 years. Okay, now let's talk about my poetry teacher. I'll call him Mr. Poe, because that's short for poetry. Poetry wasn't even an elective class. Every freshman was required to take it. And surprisingly, poetry was only the second most useless class you took at the school. The sophomores took a class on Latin. You know, that dead language that no one speaks. So Mr. Poe, I don't want to judge him too hard. I don't know how he was like outside of school, but just picking up the vibes I got from him as a 14-year-old, I think he was depressed. I mean, to be fair, anyone who likes poetry probably has something wrong in their head. But Mr. Poe just seemed sad all the time. Every single day he would start the class by saying, "It's the best day ever." Which, if you think about it, saying that every day only means that the days are going to get better and better, which is sort of poetic. But I think Mr. Poe was lying to himself. Also, Mr. Poe really liked anacondas. I mean, snakes. He really liked snakes. Sometimes he would go off on tangents talking about snakes. Royal pythons, also called American ball python, got their name because they turn into a ball when they get nervous. Also, did you know that snakes have two... Never mind. Sometimes in class, we'd be analyzing poetry, and Mr. Poe told us that every single word in a poem was important. The poet didn't have to use the word the, but they did. What did they mean? Sometimes we would spend days analyzing a single poem, taking notes and talking about what we thought the poet meant. One time a poem we were reading had someone talking, so there were quotation marks at the start of the sentence, but there weren't quotation marks at the end. The poet forgot to put end quotes. I remember noticing it and thinking, aha! A clue! Mr. Poe, I just made a breaking discovery. There's no end quotes here, meaning that the whole rest of this poem is told by this character. And Mr. Poe said, oh no, that's just a typo. Well, frickin', why am I perfectly nitpicking this piece when the poet purposely put poor punctuation in his poems? Pterodactyl! This is gonna sound off topic, but do you guys know what lateral thinking puzzles are? Lateral thinking puzzles are sort of like riddles, but more stupid. You're given a strange situation with little information, and you have to ask the person who told you the puzzle yes or no questions to get the answer. My favorite lateral thinking puzzle is this, because it's so stupid. A man goes into a restaurant, orders albatross, eats one bite, and then jumps off a bridge. Why?
Now, normally, if we were playing legitly, you would ask me yes or no questions like, was the man in a relationship? And I would answer them saying, well, not anymore. The explanation is this. I'm not going to read it out because it's super long and complicated, but you can read it if you want. Well, Mr. Poe also liked to tell these lateral thinking puzzles, but his solutions were more dumber. One of the puzzles he told the class was, you're trapped in a restaurant, how do you get out? Now, I can think of like 5 solutions right off the top of my head. Okay, through the door, through a window, use a crowbar if it's locked. There's probably a sharp knife to cut through a wall, or you can dig a hole under everything with a spoon. But it was actually none of those answers. So, how do you get out of a restaurant you're trapped in? You get an education. Okay, let me explain. You're trapped in a restaurant because you're a waiter. That's your job. And to get out of the restaurant, you need to get a good education so you can get a better job. Kind of like how I was able to quit my job in the food industry by getting an education.
It's funny because he dropped out of college.
So the class got the answer to that riddle, but Mr. Poe told us another riddle and we never figured that one out. And that riddle is, anyone can dig a ditch, but it takes a real man to... blank. Given that the answer to the first riddle was education, the answer to this could be anything. I really wanted to know the answer to this riddle, so I googled it hoping that Mr. Poe just stole it from the internet, and I found this song, anyone can dig a hole close enough to a ditch, but it takes a real man to call it home. Which sounds poetic enough. Let's see if the song gives us any more clues.
Mr. Poe, I didn't know you were into this sort of stuff.
So I wish I could give you the answer, but I don't have one. Feel free to guess what you think the answer is and give your reasoning in the comments. That'll be fun to read. But I will say the answer that I did come up with that I think makes the most sense. Anyone can dig a ditch, but it takes a real man to... hide the body.
I assume that 90% of what I see online... is just trolling. You see a video, find out it's AI, you got trolled. You click a link and hear the first 2 notes of this song, that's trolling. But when I read this comment on one of my comics, I wasn't entirely sure if it was trolling. Is Odds One Out onto comics now? Is Odds One Out onto comics now? Well, the let me tell you. A quick history lesson of Odds One Out. Comics have always had a huge influence on my humor, literacy, and even the style of this channel. In fact, you can still see some of the effects comics had on this channel to this day. Let's start at the very beginning. Growing up, my mom had a rule where I could only go on the family computer for however long I read a book for. James, what are you doing on the family computer? Oh, just a bit of trolling. Alright, you need to look at a book now. But then, I started reading comics during computer time. I stumbled upon so many unique and interesting webcomics, and I was able to read them all completely for free right on the family computer. And by filling up both my reading and computer time with nothing but comics, it was only a matter of time before I started my own webcomic. My webcomic would be about a family of 3 boys. And let me tell ya, these boys were a crazy bunch. Remember the rules while I'm gone. Last time Jake bought a hot dog stand and a snow cone machine. All right, I'm off. I don't want any funny business. Guys, how about we discuss my computer privileges over some snow cones? And I wanted the name of this comic to describe the wacky personality traits that made these boys the odd ones. That's it. That's the name of the comic. The Odd Ones Out. Which was already taken, and in 2 seconds I went, oh, easy fix. So, to answer the question, is Odds One Out on the comics now? Who do you think the Odds One is? It's these 3. To be fair, probably no one knows that these 3 boys are the odd number ones out, because for the first couple years of posting comics, about 0 people were reading them. Except for Mom. It was time for a rebrand. I figured, brevity is the soul of wit. Plus, it was easier to draw. I kept making comics to an audience of 0 people for years, when eventually, after throwing enough spaghetti at the wall, one of the spaghetti stuck. The spaghetti being this comic, which I will now read to you. Do you like the book I loaned you? Ah! Oh, you're at that part. Since my art style was ever-changing, I would often update my profile picture pretty regularly, usually just using screenshots from the comics. And one day, I made this comic about a guy doing a cannonball into a pool, and then he killed the guy. And then I thought, this pose in panel one would kind of be a good profile picture. It's square, and that ended up being the last time I ever updated my profile picture. Now you know why my icon is wearing a swimsuit, even though I'm always commando. You can actually still see the diving board in the corner of my icon, too. Wait, actually, what's going on with this diving board? Why is the ladder going into the pool? Is this AI? Eventually, after doing comics long enough, I made the switch to YouTube, and I named my channel, get this, The Odd Ones Out Comic. I was still so tied to making comics that I basically treated my channel as like a moving comic strip. I actually kept the word comic in my username for so long that it's printed on my million subscriber plaque. Also, yeah, plaques used to look like this. I took a break making comics in 2017, but that's not to say I ever lost my passion in making comics. When YouTube Shorts started to roll around, I turned some of my very early comics into vertical animations. And my comic-making itch continued to grow that in 2023, me and my team started making comics again. And I've really been enjoying creating them for all of you. So, V-Rarard, circling back to your question, yes, Odds One Out has always been onto comics now. You know, Virard, back when I had to read to earn computer time, the only books that I liked to read were comics. And my mom, who was just desperate for me to look at any kind of book, said, fine, whatever. And now I'm going to help the people of the world earn more computer time because I'm releasing my first ever comic book. Wow. This book contains a collection of some of my favorite comics along with some brand new, never before seen comics.
Wow.
Turn this boring coffee table into a bright, saturated one.
Cool.
Put it on your IKEA bookshelf to show everyone your vast collection of literature.
Neat.
You must be smart because you know how to read. But even if you don't know how to read, you're still in luck. Watch the magic of animation come to life as every book comes pre-equipped with a flipbook animation. Look at him go. My comics were what launched this channel into existence, and it's super cool seeing them in print for the very first time. Check the link in the description to get yourself a copy for right now. And a final special shout out to you, V-Rarard, for asking all the important questions. Check your DMs so I can send you a free copy. And to everyone else, thank you for the support and wear your seatbelt.
Oh my goodness, he said the thing! Wow, he said it! Wow.
The older I get, the more I've realized how much time I have to set aside just to clean. I'll ask a friend, what'd you get up to last weekend? And they'll think for a bit and then say, I just cleaned. Crap, I gotta do that too. I've seen people, therapists, and the elderly all talk about how everyone's too gosh darn connected to their cell phones. How we don't allow ourselves a single moment to be present or alone with our thoughts. But when it comes to cleaning, I think you should fill that void up with as much noise as possible. Cleaning is such a boring and monotonous task that even people in the 1700s would pass the time by singing to themselves. And while these pilgrims didn't have endless podcasts to listen to, you have YouTube videos. Like this one. So I want this video to serve as the noise you listen to while you get up and clean something. Hopefully hearing a YouTuber talk about cleaning for the next 10 minutes will motivate you to start chipping away at that mess you've been putting off for months. I'm not asking you to drop everything and do a 3-hour deep clean of your closet, but half-assing something is still better than no-assing something. And I think you'd be surprised with how nice you can make a space look in only 10 minutes. I want to give the caveat that I'm not a clean freak. I've lived in a college dorm with a bunch of other guys. My sink is most likely full of dishes as you're watching this. And if anyone needs to do a 3-hour deep clean of their closet, it's me. And I also know how hard it can be to look at a room that's in such a bleak and disarray state that you get so overwhelmed by the mess that you don't even know where to start cleaning. So you never do, which perpetuates this never-ending cycle that makes your entire space and mental health messier. Luckily, I have a solution. If you don't even know where to begin dealing with the mess, the first step to cleaning any room
is taking out the trash. That's it. That's all you have to do. All those empty bottles and boxes, get them out of there.
Whenever I clean, I like to play this fun little game that I know you've never played before because it's a game I invented. It's called... Is that where that goes? To play this game, all you have to do is point at an object and go... Is that where that goes? And if that object is where it goes, then you're good. You don't have to do anything. But if that object isn't where it goes, then you put it where it goes. And you beat the game once everything that's going to or needed to go goes where it goes. So while you're grabbing trash bags and flattening out boxes, let me explain why I found cleaning to be so important in my adult life. I really have to thank my parents for distilling... I wouldn't call it a love for cleaning, but rather a tolerance for it. Growing up, my parents would print out physical job charts for the week, and every day us kids did all of our chores, we would earn $1. However, any single chore we didn't do, we would lose $1. Meaning, it was possible for us to come out of a week of doing chores in the red. My parents were earning money and teaching us about capitalism because my bed wasn't made. Still owe them $35. We were able to earn some money back doing Saturday chores. This is when we did a deeper clean like vacuuming or mopping. But Saturday chores didn't even hold a candle to the absolute worst chores we had to do, which were the dreaded company is coming over chores. For some reason, whenever company was on their merry way, it was vital that rooms said company would never even enter in the first place were spotless. This one time, I think my mom was hosting like book club or something, I finished mopping my bathroom, which was not a bathroom that anyone in book club would be using, by the way, and my mom did her usual room cleanliness inspection and said, "I think you should wipe that bucket down too." She was making us clean. The cleaning instruments.
Do you want me to vacuum the vacuum next?
However, if it wasn't for all those chores my parents forced me to do, I feel like cleaning would have become something I dreaded doing, instead of something I can actually wind down the day with. I look forward to folding laundry and putting something on the TV because I feel like I did something productive while watching cartoons. And since I don't live with mom anymore, I don't have to clean my bucket. Which now doubles as a toilet. Cleaning has become such an integral part of my life that cleaning other people's spaces is how I show my affection. I'm about to put one of my best friends on complete blast here, but I think he'll be okay with it because he constantly asks me to put him in videos. I'm doing a video that's a puppet show with two bricks.
Can I voice one of the bricks?
Okay. I recently visited one of my close friends, Infamous Swoosh, at his place in upstate New York. He's 24, living on his own for the first time with three other dudes, and the second I stepped into his house, I went, "Oh, this is a guy's house. I don't think a woman's been in here in, like, ever." What really sealed it for me was the bathroom not having a trash can, but rather a loose trash bag leaning up against a wall. And it was full. I hadn't planned for this to be on the itinerary of my New York trip, but after seeing how dire Swoosh's living conditions were, I decided to take him to his local Target to get him some necessary supplies. I originally set out to get him three things: a trash can, trash bags, and a handheld vacuum. But as we were walking through Target, we passed the broom aisle, and I asked, "You have a broom, right?" And his shoulders started to slowly rise into a shrug, and I went, "Dude!" Then we passed the Brita filter aisle, and I said, "You have one of these, right? You haven't just been drinking tap water this whole time, right?"
"I mean, the sink's right there."
You know, Swoosh, normally when people move into a new place, they do a big Target run to get all the necessary cleaning supplies for their house.
"What do you mean? I did do a Target run. Didn't you see that buffalo painting in my office?"
Up until this point, Swoosh had been drying all of his dishes with paper towels, which I guess is good because I just assumed he was eating everything in his bare hands like a Neanderthal, so I think I'm saving him money in the long run. I'm really about to show my age here, but since I'm doing a whole video about cleaning, I just need to gush real quick about my favorite piece of cleaning equipment. This was one of the original three items I set out to get Swoosh before I knew how dire his situation was. This is completely unsponsored, by the way, but the Bissell Pet Hair Eraser Hand Vacuum has divided my life into two moments.
The time spent before I had this vacuum and the time spent after. I love this vacuum so much that I've gifted it to friends on 3 separate occasions. Now, this next piece of advice I used to roll my eyes at, but after I started doing it, I've really been enjoying it. And that is to make your bed first thing in the morning. I used to think, why do I need to make my bed? I'm just going to get it messy again. But making your bed is having the first thing you do in the morning be something that benefits your future self. It helps set the tone for the day. And if you are able to complete that small task, then you're probably more likely to complete other more important tasks. No, making my bed didn't magically fix all my problems, but no matter what kind of day I was having, it was always nice ending it in a clean bed. Obviously, there's more to life than cleaning. I would know. I own all the Warrior Cat books. But I think everyone should enjoy the space they live in. I feel like a lot of us fall into a bad habit of dreading to do a task longer than it would take for us to just do said task. I definitely can be like that sometimes, but if you've been following along and been cleaning while this video played in the background, while your room might not be completely spotless, I hope you can see how much of a difference you made in only 10 minutes. Now imagine how much you can do in 20 minutes. Isn't cleaning while watching YouTube videos so fun? Isn't doing tasks so accomplishing? So if you need to clean, go clean! Go clean your bedroom! Go clean your kitchen! Unclog that toilet! The world is your oyster! Get out there and clean! I'm terrible at decorating. Not in the sense that I have terrible taste, but rather I'm terrible doing anything. I have this debilitating habit where right before I hang a picture up on a wall, I'll go, yeah, this spot is perfect. I'll just set this on the floor real quick so I remember this is the spot I'm going to hang it up. And then that picture will stay on the floor for 6 months until I finally do hang it up, which takes less than 5 minutes to do so. Sometimes though, I'll get into a home decoration overhaul kind of mood. Like recently, I've come into the possession of 30 Warrior Cat books. Somehow. And instead of putting them in a closet next to my 30 Animorph books, I decided it was finally time to buy a bookshelf and put all of my classic literature neatly on display. After perusing multiple furniture websites and getting overwhelmed with the massive amount of choices and styles and letting my algorithm know I was desperate for a new shelving unit, I had a sudden moment of clarity. I am spending more time thinking about shelves than I've ever wanted to in my entire life. I just need something to hold my cat books. Why am I overcomplicating this? I should check old reliable IKEA. Ooh, this looks nice. The Calyx. Now, I could just pay to have this thing delivered straight to my door, or I could go on a fun adventure filled with meatballs. The older you get, the more fun going to IKEA gets. Any piece of furniture you can possibly imagine is at IKEA, with a ridiculous name. In my head, this was going to be the quickest IKEA trip of my life. I would eat some meatballs that are so delicious you don't even need spaghetti to go with them. Then I would find my Calyx and take it home. If I had 2 birds right now, I could totally kill them with 1 stone. Or meatball. But if you know anything about IKEA, a quick IKEA trip is an oxymoron. The first red flag that this trip was going awry was that as I was standing in the checkout line with my food on my lunch tray, I couldn't help but notice that even though I asked for the 12 meatball meal, I only counted 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11 meatballs on my plate. Now I had to ask myself an important question. Am I the type of guy who will step out of line, walk back to the server, and say, I don't know how you Swedes count, but here in the States... And before I even finished the hypothetical, I figured, no, I'm not that type of guy. But then, like, more minor inconveniences kept happening. After I completed my incomplete meal, I went to fill up my water bottle at one of those water filling stations. But when I put my bottle in, the flow of water, like, curved to the side. But then when I moved my bottle over to where the water was going, it wouldn't be under the sensor, so I had to do this whole dance where I kept activating and moving my water bottle, and by the time my bottle was half full, I remember thinking, I wish this machine just didn't work. Because then I would just go, oh, guess it doesn't work. But now it's making me work for my hydration. But whatever. This is all just part of the IKEA experience and why it's such a magical place. Right? I skipped grabbing a shopping cart and started blazing through all the neatly designed showrooms that I'm usually a huge sucker for.
Wow. I wish my bedroom looked like a Scandinavian child's bedroom.
I'm not doing any of that today. I had one item on my mind, and that was the one and only easy to pronounce, Calyx. Now imagine my surprise when I turned a corner and saw an entire showroom called the Calyx Collection. Maybe if I had been more observant and saw the giant Calyx display at the front of the store, or just looked on the website for two more seconds, I would have learned that Calyx is like the name of a type of bookshelf, and they come in all these different shapes and sizes, and oh no, I'm overwhelmed with choices again. I saw they were also selling these cubbies that could go into the shelves, and I thought, now I gotta get a cart. If you don't know, IKEA is a one-way street. Arrows illuminate the floor, indicating the flow of traffic. And even though I was robbed of a meatball, I was still willing to respect the rules of the road, and I did a full lap around the store. And I'm super glad I put in the work to fill up my water bottle, because this mega store was a lot more mega than I remember. I kept following the arrows, but I swear they were making me go in circles. I am not surprised that there is a never-ending IKEA SCP, because as you walk through a regular IKEA, you definitely get worried that this place will never end. But the real problem going through all the showrooms twice was that it doubled my chances to see a piece of furniture and go, oh, I actually could use that. There has got to be a Swedish word for going to IKEA for one item and then leaving with $1,000 worth of furniture. There was an end table that I swear had a spotlight shining directly on it. I could hear Swedish angels singing. This end table would be perfect for my printer, which is currently on the floor. So after two laps of the showroom, I headed to the giant warehouse to pick up my stuff, and there were these shelf dividers I wanted, which were ironically at the very back of this long shelf themselves. And by this point in my journey, I was kind of done playing by IKEA's rules, so I just climbed up in there and got them myself. What was I supposed to do? Ask someone for help and make them crawl up in there? No. Now, that amazing end table that I wanted for my printer had to be picked up in the order pickup area for some reason. I guess they had it in the super secret employee only warehouse. So I showed the guy my receipt, and my name appeared on a screen along with an estimated time my order would be ready, which was in 10 minutes. So I waited 10 minutes, and the guy never called my name. And I thought, I'm not bothered by this. It was an estimate. It's fine being a few minutes late. Then more time passed. And by this point, it had been 10 minutes after my estimated 10-minute wait time. So I go up to the guy and said, listen, I can let the meatball slide. But did you forget about me? And he was like, oh, yeah, we're just waiting on someone who can operate a forklift. Do you want me to climb up there? I added 45 minutes to my quickest IKEA trip to get something I came into the store not originally wanting. I didn't even measure if my printer would fit, so I was kind of taking a gamble there. But good news, it totally fits. So, however, even with all those minor inconveniences I had to deal with, something happened in that IKEA that really stuck out to me and, dare I say, made the whole trip worth it. After I had done my first lap of the showroom and secured a shopping cart, I saw this middle-aged woman with who I'm assuming was her mom in a wheelchair, and she was grabbing all these small items in her bare hands, and even though I had traveled very far for the shopping cart, I asked her, do you need a shopping cart?
Oh yes, that would be very helpful, thank you.
I'm doing a voice, that's not how she sounded. After I gave her mine, I did just turn around and went against the flow of traffic to grab another shopping cart. I'm only running on 11 meatballs here, I'm not doing that a third time. But then later, when I was down in the warehouse, I was about to put this big box into my cart when that same woman just so happened to be there and asked, do you need any help? And it made me realize that a simple act of kindness can be so meaningful to someone that it can completely change the type of day they're having. Admittedly, I did end up putting that box back because I realized it was in the wrong color. I'm sorry for making you crawl up in there, Grandma. Sometimes we get so wrapped up in decorating our room or scrolling on our phone that we forget the real world is out there. So go out and do something nice for someone today. It'll make both of you feel a lot better. And if you have any pictures just leaning up against a wall, go hang them up right now. It'll take like 2 seconds. Welcome to the Warrior Cat Wing of the Animation History Museum. I will be guiding your tour today. I hope you have nothing else planned. Warrior Cats is a book series that follows a society of feral cats who live in these groups that are kind of a mix between a gang and a cult. While they are considered kids' books, I will say Warrior Cats is less fun time happy cat adventures and more Watership Down. We won't be getting too graphic here, but a lot of the cats don't make it. Now, you might be wondering why these books have their own dedicated wing in the Animation History Museum. These are letters, not pictures, stupid. Well, you see, this fan base has the most animated fan base ever. Yes, even more than that one you really like. People love to draw these cats. Coming up is one of my favorite pieces. The artist's use of anime hair and Windows Movie Maker transitions perfectly encapsulates that indescribable era of 2009. And I especially love the artist's bold choice of including their OC into this piece, really calling to the essence of the human experience and that desire to rescue a villain who is also your comfort character. Something you need to understand is that kids who are now adults have been drawing these cats for quite some time. We have records of kids drawing these cats all the way back in 2004. And if you were a Warrior Cat fan during the 2008 housing market crash, then you were eating extremely well, not with food, but with edgy cat animations drawn entirely by a mouse. Fans were making anime openings, AMVs, and graphic depictions of some of the more Watership Down moments in the series. I'm blurring these out because mutilated cats bum me out. And just like the books that are still coming out, the Warriors never stopped drawing. I don't want to sound dramatic, but you could spend the rest of your life watching nothing but Warrior Cat fan animations and still not have seen them all. I actually haven't done the math on that yet, but trust me, there's a lot. Is this playlist still going? I have been fully aware of the vast quantity of Warrior Cat fan animations for quite some time. Heck, I've even hired some of them. But I've never been able to truly enjoy a Warrior Cat fan animation, as I've never read these books growing up, because all the kids in my class who did pretended to be the cats during recess and would hiss at me whenever I tried talking to them, which even back then I was like, okay, this is a little weird, guys. But I regret not reading these books growing up, because now I'm left with all these unanswered questions. Why are so many people drawn to drawing these fictional cats? What are these feelings stirring in my bosom as I watch these? And why do the art styles change so much? As we move down the Warrior Cat fan animation timeline, around 2012 is when the Warriors really begin to specialize in multi-animator projects. Basically, there were so many people willing to draw these cats that a large group of them all worked together, each animating a different segment of a video, and then when everyone's segment gets done in 14 months, the finished segments get stitched together into one complete video. I guarantee you've seen at least one of these group reanimator projects before, and you might have the Warriors to thank for that. I don't know who started the trend. Maps work out great for everyone, because now you and 40 of your animation buddies only have to animate a few seconds of a cat fight, and we get to watch a super engaging music video with changing art styles every 6 seconds. I really have to commend everyone who puts these projects together, especially the ones that were done before messaging apps like Discord even existed. But what I find extremely impressive is that everyone who signs up for these projects are doing so simply for exposure. No one involved expects any type of monetary compensation, and warrior maps are very often made to copyrighted music, meaning no one's making money off these projects anyways. I can only imagine what musicians must go through when their manager tells them, "You're not gonna believe this! Someone just made a fan-animated music video of your song on YouTube!" And then the artist goes to watch it, and they just see a bunch of cartoon cats fighting each other. Violently. Can I tell you a quick story time? Once I wandered into a Barnes & Noble and thought, I wonder if they have any physical copies of Warrior Cats, because that is something I am willing to buy. So I went to the young adult section, looked under W, and found nothing. They didn't have any. Well, that's too bad, I thought. I mean, between the main books, graphic novels, and super editions, there's only over 100 different books, with new ones still being written to this day, but I guess this BNN doesn't have any. Oh well. But then, I had the disturbing realization that I might be looking in the wrong place. I was looking in the young adult section. I needed to extend my search to the kids corner. Spelled with a Z. So, I gingerly walked from the kid book section to the little kid book section, trying to find the book I was currently reading. And there, next to the barn built into the wall and the blocks, were the warriors. I'm not going to judge you on whatever books you like to read, because I live in a glass house. If I was ever going to understand what made people so drawn to drawing these violent feral kitty cats, then I would have to start reading these. So, whether you never read these books but are curious to know why so many people are drawing the characters, or maybe you did read these books a long time ago and want a refresher from the perspective of an adult who didn't grow up with them. Either way, get your favorite cat treat and knock something off a counter as we dive paws first into the wild and wonderful world of Warrior Cats. So, spoiler warning for Warrior Cats. Our main protagonist is Rusty, a handsome ginger Tom. Those are not my words. That is how he's described in the character description at the front of the book. Ignore that he's called Firepaw right now. Firepaw and Rusty are the same cat. It'll make sense in a little bit. Rusty is a regular house cat living with people, or as he would call them, two legs. You see, cats have some pretty unique slurs for everyday normal human things. This isn't a car driving on a road, it's a monster on the thunderpath. Personally, I love it when books explain everyday mundane human things from, like, a non-human perspective. Like, yeah, a car would be a monster to a cat. It merges without using a turn signal. Now, our main cat, Rusty, grows tired of his soft kitty pet life and thinks maybe living in the forest directly behind his backyard would sorta kinda be cool. But he's not ready for a big life change just yet. But then one day, Rusty's only friend in the entire world named Smudge, he tells Rusty, "Hey, did you know when our owners take us to the vet, they chop our guys off?" Fellas, would you spend the rest of your life surviving in the woods if it meant you got to keep both of your dudes? I would. So, like many other unneutered male cats, Rusty abandons his soft kitty pet life and sets out to start a new, wild and free life in the forest directly behind his backyard. It turns out there's a whole society of wild feral kitty cats living in the forest behind Rusty's backyard, and they've divided themselves into four distinct groups, or clans. The first clan we're going to be looking at is Thunder Clan. This is the clan our protagonists belong to and where most of the story takes place. These cats are the moral, compassionate, brave ones. Gryffindor. The next clan is Shadow Clan. These are the edgy, evil cats. Slytherin. Sure, there's evil cats in every clan, but a lot of them are from Shadow Clan, especially in Season 1. Because they have Shadow in the name, I always imagined every cat here was just a black Halloween cat. The next clan is River Clan. Their main thing is they swim. I wouldn't call them Ravenclaw because they're not smart.
They're more of a water tribe.
And the next clan is Wind Clan, but you don't need to worry. They're Hufflepuffs, so... Cats from different clans hate each other and are super territorial. Don't even think about falling in love and starting a family with a cat from a different clan. That is so unaccepted, it happens constantly. And those are the four clans in the forest. However, there's one clan not in the forest we need to talk about called... Star Clan. Ooh. Did you know cats have their own religion? Your childhood cat isn't going to be kicking it with you in boring old two-leg heaven. They're going to be sharing tongues with their ancestors in Star Clan. Sharing tongues is like when cats lick each other, like, you know, normal cat behavior. But whenever I read sharing tongues, I always thought they were like French kissing or something. Star Clan is basically warrior cat heaven. And it's so much more than a character looking up at the night sky and seeing their deceased dad in the clouds. Instead, StarClan plays a much bigger role in the books, and we get to frequently visit and see what wacky antics the Cat Angels get up to. So even though there is a lot of death in Warrior Cats, just because a cat dies doesn't mean it's the last we'll ever see of them. They'll just be in their angel form from now on. And those are the five clans you need to know about. It's just those four main ones and Warrior Cat Heaven. There's not going to be, like, a secret sixth clan or anything. Now, normally, forest cats are super big on cat purity and would never allow this random outsider into their clan. But you see, the leader of Thunder Clan, named Blue Star, she had a pretty good reason to allow this handsome Ginger Tom into the clan. Blue Star, you know, kind of thought he was the chosen one. And he canonically still had both of his guys, so. Prophecies play a very big role in the wild world of warrior cats. And the first prophecy we hear about is fire alone will save the clan. So knowing that fire alone will save the clan, Blue Star sees this handsome Ginger Tom just wandering through the forest and officially accepts him into Thunder Clan, bestowing him the new name, Fire Paw. See, that's why the front of the book called him Fire Paw, remember? Now it's making sense. So completely remove the name Rusty from your brain. That's never coming back. Everyone who's read these books knows this cat as Fire Paw. He's got a paw of fire. By this point, you've probably noticed a pretty unique formula to some of these cat names. Blue Star? Fire Paw? Let's take a look at some of these other characters, shall we? Let's see, we got Ashfur, Mousefur, Leopardfur, Frostfur, Russetfur, Oak fur, bracken fur, soot fur, ash fur again? Okay, what the fur is going on? What's with all these war- If you are not privy to the naming convention of these warrior cat characters, the nomenclature of these cat names follows a simple two-part system. Every cat's name is made up of any of these prefixes and any of these suffixes. Can you see that? Graypaw, White Storm, Blue Star. Every name is like this. Mountain Dew is a valid warrior cat name. Now, I already knew about these ridiculous double-syllable names going into the series, and I was legitimately worried it would be impossible for me to keep track and remember all of these cat names. But do you want to know something I didn't know going into this series? Their name changes. When I got to the first name-changing ceremony, I threw the book down thinking, I'm not smart enough to understand the complexities of warrior cats. I should just give up. But then I thought, no. If a 9-year-old child in 2008 can remember all these ridiculous cat names, then so can I. And then I got to one of the many kit birthing scenes, and all the cats would go, oh boy, more warriors for ThunderClan. Everyone welcome Ice Kit and Fox Kit. And I would go...
I hope Ice Kid and Fox Kid die.
But I must say, once you really get into this series, remembering all the different cat names isn't that big of an issue. First of all, sometimes the cat's name will just be a short description of what they physically look like, ergo make them easier to remember. What do you think Running Nose looks like? What do you think Spider Legs looks like? I don't know what Mouse Fur looks like, but in my head, she's always wearing like a mouse costume. And just everyone, no one addresses it. They're just like, that's mouse fur. What's really bad is that there's like mouse fur and then mouse kit, like in the same scene. And it's like, What are we doing here, Aaron? And as strange as these names sound, there's actually a methodology to them that correlates to what rank a cat is. Kittens will always have the suffix kit. You read the sentence, ice kit and fox kit were playing in the hollow. You don't have to worry about them. They don't matter. Apprentices will always have the suffix paw because they're apprentices. Fire paw and gray paw are both apprentices. And anything above them is when the warrior names get a little more creative and don't have a set suffix, except for the very top, the leaders, which always have the name star, which means you have to be careful reading the wiki because sometimes learning a cat's up-to-date name is a spoiler. Now, instead of having to remember gray stripe, blue star, white storm, all you really have to remember is gray, blue, white. And while we're looking at the clan hierarchy, can I just talk about medicine cats real quick? Medicine cats are responsible for healing the sick and injured clanmates, and they don't use, like, medicine. All of their healing comes from herbs found locally in the forest, but I always felt like the books were stretching some of the healing properties they claimed these herbs possessed. Okay, the cats are constantly getting into fights, so they're getting scratches, and the med cats would put cobwebs over wounds. Okay, I can sort of see that working as like a natural band-aid. But then, during one of the many kit birthing scenes, the med cats would be like, "Oh no! Give her a poppy seed to calm her down!" And I was always like, a singular poppy seed? Like, from a bagel? At least give her, like, a couple.
So back in the forest, Rusty meets all the other apprentices in ThunderClan. And one apprentice confides in our hero some terrible news. He secretly witnessed this other cat named Tigerclaw murder another cat in his own clan.
Tigerclaw is here, and he murdered the cat here, the deputy, because deputies of a clan are next in line to be leader, so he couldn't just murder the leader, he has to murder the deputy so he could be deputy, and then he can murder the leader. Do you understand? Good. Okay, cool.
I just want to point out that I got this corkboard off Facebook Marketplace, and the pictures did not show how badly sun-damaged it was.
So immediately, this series sets up Tigerclaw as the main bad guy of the story. That he's willing to murder cats in his own clan to become leader. And getting to become the leader of a clan is a very enticing idea to Tigerclaw because leaders get blessed by Star Clan with 9 lives. Every other cat only gets 1 life, but the leaders get to die 8 extra times.
And I really like this plot device because as the series goes on, we get to keep track of how many times a leader loses a life, and the suspense builds and builds as we get closer to that final one. Now, our heroes kind of do everything in their power not to tell anyone that Tigerclaw is the bad guy. Like, there's seriously a scene where Firepaw gets a one-on-one training session with Blue Star, and he's like, "I should probably tell the leader of my clan about the broad-shoulder backstabbing murderer named Tigerclaw in the clan." But then Blue Star's like, "Fight me!" And then he gets caught up in the fighting, and then he just forgets to tell her. Okay. So just like the other characters, we're gonna keep the thought of Tigerclaw being the main bad guy in the back of our mind, because we got more important stuff to worry about. Shadow Clan just attacked Thunder Clan for no reason. Oh, fuck! And they end up killing Firepaw's secret crush, who he barely talked to and was way older than him and practiced celibacy.
The Thundercats and Shadowcats face off in a big epic battle, and eventually the heroic Thundercats defeat the evil Shadowcats.
And as the first episode comes to a close, Blue Star promotes Firepaw to the warrior class.
Firepaw's new warrior name is Fireheart.
Alright, that's now 2 times our protagonist has changed names in 1 book.
Now that Fireheart is officially a warrior, I would like to take a quick palate-cleansing break from the wild world of warrior cats, because I would feel extremely remiss if I didn't share with you all a rather humorous story time about an instance where I, too, was trying to become a warrior.
So when I was deep into reading these books, I went to this boxing gym because I was training for nothing, apparently. And on my drive to said boxing gym, I would listen to the Warriors.
It helped me get into the right headspace, I guess. Now, the way the parking lot at this gym worked was that sometimes you'd park your car in front of another car, and then you would give your keys to the receptionist guy at the front, and he would move your car for you. Totally fine, totally cool, except for the one time I made the mistake of leaving my phone in the car, a phone that would auto-connect and immediately play the last thing I was listening to if said car were to turn on. At any given moment, I'd like to think my social interaction skills are at a 7 out of 10. Pretty good, but still room for improvement. In the middle of a boxing class, I'm covered in sweat, I got stink lines coming off me, now I'm at a 6 out of 10. But when the boxing gym receptionist comes up to me and says, "Hey man, you left your phone in your car. By the way, love the book you're reading." Whoosh! Now I'm at a 0. I've talked to this receptionist before, and he knew I did YouTube, so I tried desperately to explain myself. "Oh, you know, I'm going to make a video about it. Plus, I wanted to read more this year." And then he asks, "Are you going to mention
the movie?"
I was cut off by this. I knew there wasn't a Warrior Cats movie, but I was absolutely not going to argue about it with the boxing gym receptionist in front of a bunch of dudes punching each other. So I just went, "There's a movie?" And he goes, "Yeah, there's a movie." And the way he said, "Yeah, there's a movie," made it sound like I was the dumb one for not knowing about the Warrior Cats movie. And I forget exactly what I said after that, but it was probably along the lines of, "Could someone please punch me so I no longer have to be in this conversation?" And for the whole rest of the class, I could not fathom why that guy was so positive about the existence of a movie that definitely didn't exist. Did he see someone reenact the entire book with Littlest Pet Shop Dolls and think that was a movie?
I'm sure gonna miss you, Ravenpaw.
Why don't we share tongues one last time?
It wasn't until I got back to my car when things started to click. When I turned my car on and connected my phone, the little dashboard screen thingy didn't say, "Now playing Warriors, The New Prophecy, Episode 5. All it said was, "Now playing Twilight." So he thinks I was reading that, and I don't know which is worse.
So diving paws first back into the wild world of Warrior Cats, Fireheart's best bro for life, who is now named Graystripe, starts being a little horn cat. It's like horn dog, but it's a horn cat. He's being a little frisky boy.
You see, it all started when Graystripe accidentally fell into a river and was rescued by a cat in River Clan. And these two cats from different clans immediately hit it off. But this will just be the first example of one of the many universal truths about Warrior Cats. All it takes for two characters to fall deeply in love with each other is if they ever appear in a scene together. And that's especially true for cats from different clans. Something about betraying your whole clan is sexy, I guess. Meow.
Fireheart keeps his best bro's forbidden relationship a secret when all of a sudden,
she's pregnant? And she's having the kits now? Graystripe's gonna be a dad? Graystripe's girlfriend doesn't make it through kit birth, but luckily, her kids do. We have the boy one and the girl one. You don't have to worry about them ever again. This leaf blower is killing me. What do I do? What do I do about this leaf blower? Do I ask him to stop?
After this scene, Graystripe's forbidden relationship made a lot more sense to me. It felt rushed and contrived because this was never a love story. It was an I got the River Clan leader's daughter pregnant who then died in kit birth story. A classic tale for all children's books. This death was the first in the series that made me go, "Whoa, Warrior Cats don't mess around. Who kills off the pregnant girlfriend?" And then Graystripe tries living in River Clan for a bit, but that ultimately falls through, so he doesn't get to live there anymore, and he never gets to see his two kids grow up. Well, his first two kids.
While Graystripe was going behind everyone's back to visit his River Clan girlfriend, Fireheart was going behind everyone's back to visit his biological sister at her two-legs nest. And she tells him, "You know, you're making the idea of living in the forest sound totally cool and awesome.
I don't want to completely uproot my life, though, so could you take one of my kids away and force him to live with you?
This is Cloudtail, Fireheart's sister's son. The books never call this white cat Fireheart's nephew. They always called him his sister's kit, sister's son, or sister's firstborn.
Now, this could just be because cats are quirky with words and don't have a name to describe the relationship of your sister's son. But the more the books kept avoiding ever using the word nephew, the more I started to worry that nephew was too big of a word for this reading level. But then the books throw the word jubilant at you? You're not going to use nephew, but jubilant's fine? You seriously going to make me pull out a dictionary, Warrior Cat?
Since Cloudtail was thrown into clan life kind of against his will, he doesn't super respect the strict set of rules all the clan cats follow.
And he's an atheist. Just doesn't believe in Star Clan, like, at all. That detail never really comes up, but the books let you know that he is one. It's super important that you know the religious views of these cats, okay?
Cloudtail ends up getting captured by Two Legs, and now it's up to his mother's brother to rescue him. When this scene was first introduced, I got super excited, because by now, so much of the drama in this series has been cats fighting over prey, cats fighting over territory, and cats fighting over love. So when the opportunity of a rescue my sister's son heist was introduced, I was excited just for something different. Fireheart's going to have to navigate through a two-leg nest he's never been in before and describe all the mundane human things he sees from his non-human cat perspective. What is this strange hissing elephant? I love it when books do that kind of stuff.
But while I was thinking of all the interesting possibilities, Fireheart just opens the front door and Cloudtail escapes. He never even goes inside. Cool. Glad you're back, Cloudtail. You're going to follow the strict set of rules, but still be an atheist? No, that's fine. Yeah, I think I saw some fresh kill we could hunt back there.
Once our heroes were finally done dealing with their atheist nephew and pregnant girlfriend, they finally came to their senses and told the leader Blue Star about the murderous broad-shouldered Tiger Claw in the clan.
And it actually got to a point where I started to question if Tiger Claw really was the main bad guy.
Now, this might just be because I watch too many movies, but when something tries this hard to tell me he's the main bad guy, especially this early on in the story, I start to think, yeah, I can smell this plot twist coming from a mile away.
Fireheart never had any proof Tiger Claw was evil. He was just blindly believing what this other random apprentice was saying. Tiger Claw was there when Cinderpelt got her legs run over, but we don't know for sure he caused the accident. How does a cat even orchestrate something like that?
Yeah, he might be constantly giving off bad vibes, but that's just all part of the misdirection. I'm telling ya, there's enough wiggle room here for this cat to actually be the misunderstood good guy.
But it turns out, no. He is evil and he did all those evil things.
Tiger Claw, what is this?
Blue Star's meow is sharper now, edged with anger, not fear.
I'm the leader of your clan. I'm the leader of your clan.
Or have you forgotten that?
Not for much longer, Tiger Claw growled. I'm going to kill you, and kill you again, as many times as it takes for you to join Star Clan forever.
It wasn't until I read that exact line when I started to think, okay, Tiger Claw is for sure the main bad guy. I thought it was ambiguous this whole time, but no, he's the bad guy, he's bad.
So the villain of the story turned out to be a character I wasn't expecting to be the villain, making Tiger Claw, at least for me, an untwisted twist villain.
So Tiger Claw is exiled from the camp, and since Blue Star no longer trusts anyone else in the camp, except for Fireheart, she promotes him to clan deputy. Meaning, at the start of the series, Fireheart was here, below everyone in the clan, and by the end of episode 3, he's already here, second in command. Next in line to be leader.
But the cherry on top, this terrible news cake, is that our main bad guy, Tiger Claw, isn't done doing main bad guy things.
Shadow Clan just made some pretty significant changes to the clan hierarchy. Our main bad guy, Tiger Claw, who was the biggest proponent of cat purity, by the way, switches teams and becomes the new leader of Shadow Clan. He finally got his wish of becoming leader and getting 9 lives. We're dealing with Tiger Star now. Then Tiger Star sets a pack of wild dogs loose in the ThunderClan camp, and they end up killing random background characters.
It's one of those wild feral dogs that kill cats and tear off faces. Oh, it's so the horror. I'm getting attacked by a dog. Ah! Oh, wait, I'm wearing makeup. Maybe you should.
The dogs chase Fireheart off a cliff and into some rushing water, and right as the light begins to fade from his eyes, Blue Star swoops in and rescues him.
But I guess that used up the last of her energy because, in a horrible twist of fate, she's now dying. And it's her last life, by the way. I've been keeping track.
This one's for you, Blue Star.
Okay, so, she's out of the picture. Fireheart, the current clan deputy, becomes the new leader of ThunderClan. Which also means he's going to change name.
His new name is Firestar. All right? It's not Fireheart or Firepaw, and it's certainly not Rusty. This is Firestar. This will be the last time that he changes names. It's physically impossible for him to change names again.
Unfortunately, this moment was spoiled for me. I always knew that Rusty would be the leader of ThunderClan because while I was researching this video, I remembered this classic fan animation I saw ages ago about Fireheart not liking waffles.
Oh, waffle time, it's waffle time. Will you have some waffle mine?
So I watched this video again for entirely research purposes and was horrified to see the video was actually called Fire Star Doesn't Like Waffles. This video was a pretty big spoiler for me. So Tiger Star and Fire Star are now both topped to the nines new lives. If we're ever going to defeat Tiger Star, he's going to have to be eliminated 9 times. Voldemort only needed 8 times. It's going to be a race of cat and cat to see who will be the last cat to lose their final life. And with the amount of books that are still in the series, I could see their rivalry lasting a really, really long time. Until this series goes in a direction that I think I should mention spoiler warning again, because wow. If you're at all familiar with this story and know what's about to happen, I bet you've just been dying for me to get to this part. To help accomplish his destroy Firestar by any means necessary plan, Tiger Star teams up with Blood Clan? Here's my mood board for the secret 6th clan that's been here this whole time. These are the extremely tough city cats. They live in the city that we've never heard of before. They don't have strange double syllable names or believe in a star clan, but they still call themselves a clan and have a clan leader for some reason. The leader of Blood Clan is Tiny. He's this tiny little black cat that wears a dog teeth collar, and he's a fan favorite. That's what all of this has been building up. You see? Scourge, Scourge, Scourge. I'm Scourge. I already pointed to myself. I know I've been doing a lot of Harry Potter references throughout this video, but I don't think there's a single Harry Potter character that best encompasses who this cat is. I think the best fictional character I could make a comparison to is Shadow the Hedgehog. So how are they going to fight 2 evil clans that formed an alliance? Well, the thing is, Tiny Little Scourge betrays Tiger Star and murders him in front of everyone. But that's okay. He's got 9 lives, remember? Wait, what's happening? Again, the massive tabby's body grew still for a heartbeat. But again, the wound was too terrible to yield to the healing trance. His claws tore up clumps of grass in his agony, while his screeches turned from fury to terror. This is a kid's book. He's dying 9 times! Holy shit, said Firestar.
Tiny Little Scourge kills Tiger Star so badly that he dies, resurrects, and then dies again 9 times. So the villain of the story turned out to be a character I wasn't expecting to be the villain.
They got me twice!
Initially, I was in denial. No, Tiger Star canonically had 9 lives. He can't die instantly to a cat we just met. This scene had me so flabbergasted that I had to reach out to someone. And everyone I talked to about it was always like, oh, you mean Scourge? I love Scourge. Scourge is so cool. And then I thought, okay, if this cat is so beloved, I should at least give him a chance. Maybe this whole time, the books were actually setting up how evil and ruthless this Scourge guy is. You thought that cat was the main bad guy? This new guy just killed him with barely any effort. This also sets up that Firestar's brand new 9 lives are essentially worthless because this new cat can just kill you and have you instantly burn through all 9 of them. Well, not instantly. Slow and painfully. Which is definitely worse.
Alright. It's a little unconventional, but if this is how the series sets up the actual main bad guy, then let's do it. Scourge, you've won me over.
When Scourge and Firestar face off for control over the whole forest, Scourge very easily kills Firestar, because of course he does. Firestar is just a random kitty pet who stumbled his way up the clan hierarchy. And this is Scourge. Ultimate life form Scourge.
Firestar
dies. Except this time, when Scourge kills a clan leader, he only loses once. One life. He only dies once because of the power of friendship or something. I think it's a metaphor for Jesus, actually, and I'm not making that up. Unlike Tiger Star, Fire Star successfully, I'm sorry, fellas, I'm keeping you away from your, like, friends and family. Fire Star successfully resurrects, and Scourge is very understandably caught off guard by this because he's never seen a cat do that before. So this time when they face off, it goes a little like this. And that's how season 1 of Warrior Cats ends. As you know, we frequently get to visit and see what wacky antics the cat angels get up to in Cat Heaven. And while Tiger Star's ghost makes a pretty prevalent comeback, basically becoming the new Cat Satan, we never get to see Scourge or his spiky collar ever again. How is a cat who only shows up in this much of the story, kills the main bad guy, and then leaves and never comes back this beloved? It's because he's the ultimate life form, baby. If the only knowledge of warrior cats you have is from what I've told you in this video, while you do know more than the average person about warrior cats, you're still probably not going to understand what most of these fan animations are really about, because we only looked at 6 books out of like 100, and you don't know what the characters actually look like. I've just been showing you Garfield characters. However, my dear viewer, I really wanted to get the full Warrior Cat experience. So I read season 4. This is 4. Shit. I've read season 2, season 3, and season 4. Really just trying to get the full Warrior Cat experience. Season 4 seemed like a good stopping point. I also forgot to mention, I read the Super Editions too. It was like 27 books. 27 books. I've read 27 books this year. Get on my level. I didn't want to do all of them. I'm not crazy, okay? I'm in a padded room. I'm not crazy. So, with me as your local Warrior Cat expert, I can safely say I still have no clue what most of these fan animations are about. It's not my fault that I don't understand these. Most of the things that these people are animating aren't even canon. They've just been animating fanfiction this whole time. Cleopatra takes a character who's not even that prevalent and imagines her as an Egyptian sphinx cat who has, like, no ties to Egypt at all in the books. Next up forever, what if Firestar and Scourge switched lives and Firestar was the one with the spiky collar? Holyphon, all right, this one's got a giant snake monster in it. Mr. Fear asks the question, what if there was a zombie outbreak in Warrior Cats? Scavengers of the Wind, this one's also got a zombie theme going on and is genuinely the most terrifying Warrior Cat animation I've ever seen. I was legit watching this on my TV and I had to turn it off halfway through because it was so terrifying. I don't want to talk about it anymore. It took me reading almost 30 books to finally understand that Warrior Cat fan animations aren't meant to be understood. It seems like people just like drawing cats. But why is that?
Now, I actually have 5 different reasons why I think people are so drawn to drawing these cats. And the first reason is because cats are just fun to draw. Think about it this way. Would you rather spend years studying human anatomy, toiling away for hours trying to get the fingers right, or would you rather just draw a dumb little cat with a new woo face? Reason number 2 is the expansive world. This is the official Warrior Cats family tree. There's quite a few characters that I skipped over. I once heard someone describe Warrior Cats as Game of Thrones for kids, and while I've never seen or read any Game of Thrones, I totally agree with that sentiment. It's even got the incest and everything. Since there are so many characters and little mini-adventures, it's very easy for someone to have a favorite character or moment that they can connect with, regardless of how prevalent they are in the story. And the third reason I think people are so drawn to drawing these cats is the lack of official art at the time. These days, Warrior Cat fans have official graphic novels that they get to look at, and I do own them, but I keep lending them out to people, so that's my bad. But in the early 2010s, all fans had to go off of were words and their imaginations, which I think made people more inclined to draw out their favorite moments in the series, regardless of how graphic and gory they were. In fact, the kids really like drawing the graphic and gory stuff. That's a conversation for another time. The fourth reason I think people like drawing these cats is how this series is perfectly set up to be a fandom. Is that what it says? Perfectly. That's hilarious. Creating your own Warrior Cat OC with a tragic backstory and a unique double-syllable name is not only very easy to do, but it's actually encouraged by the books themselves. At the back of some of these books is this, like, fully plotted out Warrior Cat D&D campaign inviting readers to pretend to be the cats. I always thought the kids during recess who pretended to be the cats were just very devoted fans, but they were just following the instructions the books clearly laid out for them. And the last reason I think people like drawing these cats is because their passion is infectious. I highly recommend you go down the same Warrior Cat fan animation rabbit hole that I did, because what you'll find is thousands of dedicated fans all creating art of their favorite book series. And they're not doing it for money or for views, but because they're passionate. And there's also, like, a bunch of videos that are over 15 years old, and that just makes me nostalgic for that early era of YouTube. I went into this video trying to understand what it was about this series that made people want to draw the cats, but the funny thing is, I ended up drawing these cats too. It's a virus. These cats are so drawable. I initially got my start online creating webcomics. It's something I enjoy doing. I love thinking of a joke, doodling it out, and sharing it with the world. That's my passion. And I guess seeing all of these passionate artists creating these fan animations looked like a whole lot of fun. And the fact that the main character is a ginger male cat, come on, that's just too perfect of an opportunity to do a Garfield reference. I don't think anyone's ever done that before. So me and my team created 40 Garfield-inspired Warrior Cat webcomics, and we posted them every Wednesday. And even though we didn't make any money off of them, I really enjoyed making them and posting them every Wednesday. And not to get too vulnerable here, I know these are just Garfield comics, but they really helped me find my passion in creating art again. So thank you all for reading them. I hope you enjoyed. So if you're someone that's missing a little passion in your life, try watching hours of Warrior Cat fan animations. They're a whole ton of fun to watch. They do get a little violent at times, so, you know, be aware of that. And if you're someone that's ever produced a Warrior Cat fan animation, thank you for inspiring others to follow their passions. And if anyone on the Aaron Hunter team is watching, I hope you know you've made a lot of kids furries. That's all I'll say about that. Thank you all for watching. Have a good night, and I'll see you next time.
Thank you all for joining me in this deep dive into the wild world of Warrior Cats.
I know this is a pretty different video than I usually post. I had my face in it for a lot more than I usually do, but this video still took a long time to make because I read all of these books, and there was a period of time where I thought I could talk about all four seasons of Warrior Cats, but then the script was just way too long, and I thought season one was good enough on its own to be its own dedicated video. If you like this video, let me know, and I can do more Warrior Cat videos. Thank you all for watching, I hope you enjoyed, and wear your seatbelt. One time, me and a group of buddies were driving through Texas, and we passed a building that looked like the Whataburger corporate office. Just to be sure, I checked my phone and discovered, yeah, we did just drive past the Whataburger corporate office. But what I found interesting was that the building had hundreds of one-star reviews. After some investigation, I found that these reviews weren't coming from the Whataburger corporate staff. No, these reviews were from once loyal customers who in one way or another had a negative experience at a Whataburger and were going to take this issue to the top! Reading people's wordy laments about their terrible fast food experiences has become a hobby of mine. And it's not just Whataburger. Every fast food corporate office has hundreds of one-star reviews. These people have been wronged by a billion-dollar company, and the only way they can get back at them is calling them stupid. The team at blah 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 have no intelligence whatsoever. I ordered 3 large lemonades, and all 3 spilled in the inside of my car because the cup holder was way too flimsy. I told the manager named Josh, and all he said he could do was say he's sorry. Sorry isn't going to clean up the mess caused by their stupidity! This guy spilled 3 lemonades all over his car, and instead of going, "Ah, I'm so stupid," he went, "Ah, Josh is stupid." This just goes to show that you could do your job perfectly and still have angry customers. Also, what did you expect Josh to do? Hey, I just spilled all that lemonade you gave me in that cup holder. Oh my goodness. How could I be so stupid? I forgot to turn off spill mode. Bring your car out back and I'll get a straw and then I'll suck it dry.
No need to thank me. That's what fast food employees are for.
I can't talk about fast food without bringing up a small local sandwich shop in my area. So here are some of my favorite one-star Subway reviews. We went to the location in blah blah blah. We had 30 minutes to close. I know, sucks, but there was a huge regional wrestling match and there were some starving boys. I walked in and let them know we had 20 sandwiches to order. We didn't have crazy expectations. Substituting meat, forget tomatoes if you're out. We don't need toasted, let's just feed these boys. 9 sandwiches in, the sweetest girl who was making our food said her manager said, "Shut it down," and they're not making the rest of the order. The manager had the employee in tears, and 9 boys didn't get food. I was mind blown. We offered big tips, gave free oil changes to employees working hard to make money. I run a mechanic shop and stay late for customer a lot. We didn't have crazy expectations. We just wanted a whole catering order 30 minutes before close. I know some people are going to be thinking, you're a business that's still open, so you have to do what the customer says. But I want those same people to ask their mother to make them 20 sandwiches at 9:30 p.m. and let me know what she says. And if those 9 boys were still upset, they should have just suplexed the manager into a table and then made the cold cut combo themselves. I placed an order online for 2 footlongs. I walked in to pick up my order, and I was thankful I didn't leave a tip. I received 1 footlong, but ordered 2. It's very clear on the receipt that was attached to the package. I showed it to the woman working behind the counter, and she laughed and said, "Oh, I didn't see that. Let me get that for you." Not sure why she missed that. Has never happened to me before. Is she on something, or does she not know how to read English? I had to stand there and wait for her to make the other footlong. And then this person continues to write a whole 500-word manifesto. Are they on drugs? Can they read English? Jeez. Do you think this reviewer is going to tell their grandkids about this story? And then I had to stand next to the sneeze guard for 2 minutes. Okay, Grandma, can we go? And they forgot the mayo! There are a whole bunch of lengthy reviews just like this. And for these types of reviews, I, like, start thinking about these people psychologically. I feel like these people either have something else going on or nothing else going on. I'm sorry that your lunch was ruined, but if this is the biggest problem in your life, you're doing all right. And maybe this wouldn't have happened if you left a tip.
I went to the location at blah, blah, blah. The guy Frank there needs to take some customer service classes. He is not friendly, and when I told him he should be more friendly to his customers, he told me to go ahead and call whoever I wanted to complain. Frank, I love you. You don't need to take customer service classes. You need to be teaching them. IDK, who was working at around 9:45 on May 17th, but somebody needs to give them a hug. I pull up to the window to pay, and there was three girls standing there doing nothing. One of them mumbled my total and stuck out her hand. I gave her my card, and she did her thing. Then she handed me a crumpled mess of a bag and two drinks with, like, zero ice. No have a nice night, no thanks for stopping in, not even a hello. IDK, if all three of those girls lives together and somebody ran over their dog or something, but all three of them looked like they absolutely hated being there, and me ordering my meal was the biggest inconvenience they could have experienced. I feel so bad for these workers, they need a hug, but also screw them one star. I can't believe this McDonald's took my review down, but that's okay, I will recite it. They had no barbecue sauce for their nuggets the whole Memorial Day weekend. For all you barbecue sauce lovers out there, when you went to this location on any of those days and asked for barbecue sauce and you were told they didn't have any more, you must have felt crushed like I did. Like, what was the point of ordering nuggets and finding out they didn't have barbecue sauce afterwards? Why didn't they disclose that fact before ordering the nuggets and paying for it? I'll tell you why. Because they wanted to take advantage of us, just to get that sale. What, the employees do take the barbecue sauce to their homes to use for their own Memorial Day weekend barbecues? This is one memorable, unfavorable moment that will be remembered for years to come. You know, there are many who are barbecue sauce lovers out there that went through the same feeling I did when I ordered three 20-piece nuggets just to find out afterwards they didn't have any barbecue sauce. Like, if you agree. I don't want to jump to any conclusions, but do you think they're out of barbecue sauce because the world's number one barbecue sauce lover keeps ordering there? Going through all the trouble to write a review and then recite the review again, all because they were out of barbecue sauce, seems like a lot, but 60 nuggets with no sauce on a national holiday is a tragedy, I'll give you that. I love that this guy didn't even consider that they were just out of sauce and instead went full conspiracy mode, thinking the employees were hoarding the sauce for their own barbecue. You gotta have barbecue sauce for your barbecue. It's in the name. I'm not going to act like every fast food restaurant is in the right all the time, because I've had my fair share of terrible fast food experiences too. I once ordered a burger from Sonic, and they gave me the burger with no meat. And I went, dang, well, that's how my day is gonna go, I guess. I didn't write a lengthy review to hopefully be seen by someone at corporate. I don't know. I got other problems. If reading these reviews has taught you anything, it's that these fast food workers have to deal with all sorts of customers going through all sorts of problems. So please be the customer who shows a little compassion. They are handling your food after all. Leave a like if you agree. My child works for Whataburger, hasn't been paid since December 2nd. Today is 1-4 and still no paychecks. We've been told lies saying paycheck is coming to the store, then FedEx is delivering it, and still nothing. He's only 18, so I feel like they're trying to get over on him. Not to mention the shift manager Liz is having an affair with some of the employees. Yo, what? A burger? Thank you all for watching the video. If you enjoyed it, then I highly recommend reading some of these corporate office fast food reviews yourself. They're a real treat to read. Just some of the passion that these people have needs to be studied. Obviously, not everyone who leaves a one-star review is an obnoxious Karen, but the ones who go out of their way to review a corporate office are some of my favorites. Thanks again for watching, and wear your seatbelt. A Pokemon Nuzlocke is a set of rules that turn a normal playthrough of Pokemon into a hardcore playthrough of Pokemon. You're only allowed to catch the first Pokemon you see per route, and if any of them faint, they actually don't live anymore, and you can never use them again. The game I will be Nuzlocking will be Pokemon Ruby. Not because I'm copying Jaden, but because Gen 3 is my favorite generation, and out of the three games, Ruby was the one I played as a kid and bought with my own money. It was $40. Imagine paying that much for a copy of the game now. Also, full disclosure, I've seen other PokeTubers who have a deep, uncanny knowledge of this game and use calculators to make the best, most optimal plays.
but I'm not quite at that level yet, so I might make choices that some could consider suboptimal.
I thought grass was, like, super effective against water. Why is he super effective against me?
But if you can forgive me and look past all that, then let's get out of this truck and start our adventure.
Let's see. Someone's already picked Torchic, and when I played this as a kid, I picked Treecko. So that means we're left with Kipmud. After defeating my rival's Treecko, I headed to Oldale Town and caught my first Pokemon that would be joining our team, Floof the Poochyena.
I'm guessing naming Pokemon after pets is very common in Nuzlocke. By the way, this is how Floof's very first fight went.
Oh! Oh! Oh my god.
Hey, do you want to learn how to catch Pokemon?
No. I'm good.
Well, that's too bad. First, you want to get him weak by throwing tiny rocks at him.
Traveling through Route 104, I caught
a Zigzagoon.
Iggsy the Zigzagoon. I'm probably not going to train her up or anything, but she will be useful teaching useless HMs to. What's that, Iggsy? You have an ability where you pick up random objects? And you picked up a revive? Oh, Iggsy. I can't use these.
Wandering through Petalburg Woods, some guy asked me if I'd seen any Pokemon named
Shroomish.
The main reason Gen 3 is my favorite is because the best Pokemon ever, Breloom, makes his debut in this game. Why, if I found a Shroomish in this forest, I would probably react like this.
This guy was being truthful.
I named Shroomish Goat because not only is he the greatest of all time, but because I was also working on this other video about goats, so I had a lot of goats on the mind. We made it to Rustboro Town and challenged Roxanne, the rock-type gym leader, but thankfully we picked the water starter, so, you know, Kidmup, do your thing. I caught a Talo on Route 116, and keeping with the naming Pokemon after pets theme, I named him RE2. Not to spoil anything, but don't get too attached to RE2, Jaden. We sailed to Juford Town and saw that the second gym was a fighting-type gym, so that meant
fighting-type weakness.
It was RE2's time to shine.
He's, like, actually a higher level. I didn't like that. He's too high of a level.
Despite being a lower level, we decided to wing it and managed to defeat everyone's Pokemon, only having to tap out at Brawly's Makahuita, which Kidmup mopped the floor with.
Hey, when did you start walking on two legs, Kidmup?
The next HM we learn is this terrible move, Flash. The only thing Flash is good for is lighting up a dark cave that technically isn't even required to progress through the game if you know where you're going. I, however, do not. Currently, Goat is the only one on the team who can learn Flash. But I'm like 80% sure once a Pokemon learns an HM move, they can't unlearn it. So I really don't want to teach this S-tier Pokemon an unforgettable F-tier move. Oh boy, an Abra! I bet he can learn Flash. Oh boy, a Zubat! Okay, I'm kind of fudging the rules here. This Zubat wasn't technically the first Pokemon I saw on this route, but does it even count as an encounter if all you do is look at a Pokemon and then they teleport away?
Excuse me?
Look, I just need this useless Pokemon to learn this unrequired move. Zubat, I'm calling you Mr. Flash and immediately teaching you...
No!
Goat, you can learn Flash.
Yay! After clearing out Team Magma from a museum, we were ready to take on Watson, the electric-type gym leader. Luckily, we picked the water-ground starter, so... Kidmup, do your thing.
Now what? Do I go here?
Here? How did I get here?
During my wandering, both the Pokemon I named after pets evolved into bigger versions of themselves, and Goat learned Headbutt.
Can I get rid of Flash?
No! Hey, lady, I'm kind of lost, so I'm entering random houses and asking NPCs where I should go. Oh, you have Harbor Mail? I'll trade you that for my coin case.
Coin case?
You know, for gambling.
Gambling?
Listen, I don't have a problem. The reason I'm this excited is because one of the prizes you can win at the casino is a Pokemon.
a Pokemon that may help me build the perfect team. So, before I checked what the prizes actually were, I bought 500 coins for a measly 10,000 Pokédollars.
Just TMs? Just dolls? I just wasted a lot of money, didn't I?
Good news, though. Goat evolved into his perfect form and learned Mach Punch.
Right.
Eventually, I talked to the right NPC, taught Iggsy Rock Smash, and while exploring a fiery path, I caught my first fire-type Pokemon.
Okay.
Numel.
Let's go, man!
Even though Numels can be found in the desert, have a big hump on their back, and evolve into something called Camerupt, for some reason, I never looked at this Pokemon and thought, camel. I always thought, fire cow. So that's why I named her Cooked Beef. Then, on Route 114, we encountered a Zangoose.
Hello!
I have no clue what this Pokemon does, but it looks way cooler than all the Oddishes and tiny birds I kept running into, so it had to be awesome. Cooked Beef, the 9 levels you have on this goose are more than enough to weaken it. Hit him with an ever-
Oh, please don't. Oh!
Cooked Beef! So, my only fire type died to a quick attack that did 50 damage. Zangoose, or should I say Beef Eater, you can join the team for now, but just know, we could have killed you at any point. It was a challenge not to kill you. We headed up a mountain and fought Maxie, the leader of Team Magma, who had his own floof Pokemon, which Goat took care of, and he had his own evolved Cooked Beef. I sure wish I had one of those on the team. Hey, Beef Eater, why don't you make yourself useful and fight that Crobat?
Okay, that's kind of cool.
As we headed down the mountain, who did I encounter but...
Who's the new Pokemon?
Another Numel. Immediately, I abandoned Beef Eater to make room for Return of King. Before we take on gym number 4, I think I figured out a way to get Goat to forget the move Flash without having to beat him over the head with a 2x4. A little Pidgey told me that Goat was about to learn a new move at his next level. So by placing him in the Pokemon daycare and doing some light cardio outside, he'll level up, learn the new move, and forget Flash. And my plan worked like a charm.
Yeah.
It really sucks that this is the only way to get Pokemon to forget an HM move. You'd think they'd have some, I don't know, a move deleter NPC or something. Gosh. Now you'd think that since I picked the water starter, that the fire type gym wouldn't be an issue. But it was. Floof and I quickly learned why biting lava was a bad idea.
Okay!
Thankfully, Kidmup, who I don't know why I didn't send out first, took out both of Flannery's Slugmas with no issue. But then, she sent out Torkoal. Even though Kidmup was using a super effective move, he only did this much damage. Meanwhile, Torkoal's body slams were doing this much damage. And paralyzing us! Okay, Goat, I know you're the Goat, but you understand why you can't fight a fire turtle, right? RE2, looks like you're up. Finish her off with a steel whip!
Ah! Dude!
RE2! No! What do we do? None of you are great choices. What I really need is a turn to heal up Kidmup, but... Hey, Iggsy. Are you aware of the concept... taking one for the team? Given the dire circumstances, this felt like the best choice. Sorry, Iggsy. With Kidmup healed, we managed to get Torkoal's health really low, but then Kidmup refused to finish the fight because he was, in his words, immobilized by love. Kidmup, I know you're letting this turtle body slam you on purpose, and you're sick for it!
Do you really think we have a future together?
Okay, Goat, I know this is a fire turtle, but she's mostly using body slams. Could you please punch this turtle's head off without falling in love? We earned our 4th gym badge, but it wasn't without some casualties. RE2 and Iggsy, we wouldn't have made it this far without you. Thanks for everything.
We traveled into a sandstorm where I picked up two Pokemon, this fossil, and this weird Pokemon I've never seen before, Baltoy. Alright, King, my second chance at a fire type. I know this isn't your natural habitat, but why don't we train here in the desert for a bit? Oh, you found a Baltoy. I just caught one of those. I'm not sure what its moves are, though.
Web nuts.
God! Okay, team. I know everyone is upset this thing shares a species with the Pokemon who blew up King, but it possesses psychic abilities that I believe could be very useful. So, please everyone give a warm welcome to King Eater! No one step on it. We headed back to Petalburg City and faced gym number 5, my dad. Also, I brought Odd One-ish just in case we had another Iggsy-type situation.
Am I an integral member of the team?
You sure are, bud. Despite a few close calls...
Who? Dude! Dude! Finish him off. No!
Everyone, including Odd One-ish, made it out alive.
Oh my god.
Good thing we have free healthcare. I don't know what I'd do if someone took away my free healthcare. Not right now, goat. Across the water on Route 118, I caught Pikachu the Electrike.
Great.
I don't know, he's electric like Pikachu, and his head kind of looks like pickles, so... Whatever, having an electric type on the team is huge. After inspecting all the Pokemon I had, I figured Mr. Flash's flying poison moves could be used.